During this season of Lent, you'll notice worship, the cadence of worship is a little bit different. You may feel a little off kilter. And Lent is kind of a time to feel a little bit off kilter, isn't it? It's a time of reflection and renewal, of coming back to first things, testing whether or not we are really seeing the world as it is. I read something this week from Brian McLaren, a short little sentence that I liked when I was thinking about the gift of uncertainty that we sometimes find in the dark wood. Brian McLaren says, "Certainty is overrated." Yeah, it is. It also reminded of a quote by Dante that's in the Divine Comedy, part of the Inferno is part of the Divine Comedy. He writes, and this is sort of a selection of literature that produced this theme of the gifts of the dark wood. "In the middle of the road of my life, I awoke in a dark wood where my true way was wholly lost. In the middle of the road of my life, I awoke in a dark wood where my true way was wholly lost." In Lent, we're going to be exploring, as the weeks go on, the idea of waking up or finding ourselves in that dark wood, of finding ourselves in darkness, in lostness, in indecision, in, today, uncertainty. We're going to be trying to hold on to the conviction that there is a fierce beauty and astonishing blessing that exists not as we escape from the dark woods, but within the experiences that are difficult for us, the experiences that most of us fear, but none of us can really avoid. Think for a moment about a dark woods moment in your life, an experience of failure maybe, or of emptiness, or of uncertainty. Certainly you have them, they are unavoidable. Here's something I think we sometimes miss. These dark woods moments in our lives are not only fearful for us, they're also critical for us, because the dark woods experiences, and see if this resonates true in your own experience, don't they often provide us clues to our calling or our meaning in life? So during this period of Lent, I'm going to keep inviting us to consider and to take seriously the most deep experiences of spiritual awakening that have presented themselves not in the absence of struggle, but rather in the very heart of that struggle. Think about some of your proudest achievements for a minute. Is it not true that nearly everything that you've accomplished, and I think about this in my own life, it's probably true for me, that the things that I have been truly proud of have either directly or indirectly sort of come as a result of an experience that has cost me something. A previous failure of something else, or an experience that was birthed out of disappointment. Isn't it true that often our deepest blessings in life have come to us not by way of some long-held expectation that has been fulfilled, but rather by some expectation that in fact had been thwarted? And because in its place, a new possibility then was given the opportunity to arise out of something that we thought was a simple tragedy. Think about some of our heroes, personal heroes, faith heroes, cultural heroes. Hasn't it been the same for them? Frederick Douglass, Walter Rauschenbusch, who would never have come up with the idea of the social gospel had he not lived in Hell's Kitchen, New York. Dorothy Day, Martin Luther King Jr., Oscar Romero, Desmond Tutu. On Ash Wednesday, we had a beautiful, small little service in the chapel for Ash Wednesday. And the reading at that time was a reading about the Apostle Peter, not at that time an apostle, simply a follower of Jesus, who steps out of the boat because Jesus says, "Walking on the water, come out and grab my hand." And Peter steps out of the boat and begins to sink. It's interesting that Peter, who steps out of the boat and immediately fails, is the rock upon which the church is founded. Peter, who denies Jesus three times before he is crucified, is the rock upon whom the church is founded. It was that Peter who, on the day of Pentecost, preached the sermon at which thousands of people were brought into the new budding church. Too often we in churches act as though we expect a kind of perfection of ourselves or from other people as a norm. Out there, there's an expectation that our churches and doctrines have to be just right. Our people ought to be always good and just. They must always be playing well together. They must never make mistakes or commit any offenses or have troubles in their personal lives. And in the same way, an impression is kind of given that people's jobs should always be fulfilling, and that our coffers should always be full. Our marriages and partnerships should never see any rocky shoals and should last forever. Our bodies should always be healthy. Our children should never get into trouble. Our spirit should never feel exhausted. Good Christian people should never feel depleted or fail or get lost or feel uncertain. It's almost as if in the typical American Christianity that exists around us, if anybody is not just so, or admits to feeling emptiness or uncertainty, then they're just not right with God. Something's wrong with them. You know, you don't get the blessings of the big heavenly sugar daddy by doing bad stuff. It's a version of the prosperity gospel, right? If you're doing the right thing, everything should be fine and dandy for you, and the world should be easy. But that's not the true gospel, and it's not true Christianity. Jesus, at a moment of supreme faithfulness on the cross, cries out, my God, why have you forsaken me? Christianity has as its foundation the experience of those who outsiders might rightly look upon and perceive to have been failures. We just talked about Peter. And think about Jesus, whose ministry ends in execution and death. So the question for this Lent is, what is to be made of the dark wood? Dante probably really didn't get the full meaning of what he wrote down in the Divine Comedy. He says in that piece, "In the middle of the road of life, I awoke in a dark wood where my true way was wholly lost." But for Dante, the dark wood is the entrance into the inferno. It's bad news. He finds himself on a path that's not good. But we can look at that word awoke a little differently. In the middle of the road of my life, I awoke in a dark wood where my true way was wholly lost. And this is what the mystics do, the Christian mystics. They say that there is an awakening that can happen in the dark wood. St. John of the Cross calls this the dark night of the soul, or Teresa of Avila calls it the fifth mansion. An unnamed English mystic calls it the entrance into the cloud of unknowing, where we meet the truly divine, the God beyond God, the God of our idolatry. Meister Eckhart calls it the ground, or the simple one, the simple silence. It's the place where we see reality as it is. The dark wood is the place where we meet God as God is. It's a place where there's no mask juggling going on. I was listening the other day in the car to Garrison Keillor about Lake Wobegon, you know, and Lake Wobegon is the place where all the women are strong and all the men are good looking and all the children are above, right? Because that's the way it's supposed to be. That's not the way it really is, though, is it? In the dark wood, there's no mask juggling that takes place. We are sort of bared. We run up against the truth. And we human beings want to try to get out of the dark wood as fast as we can. But that's not what we're going to do this Lent, because that's really not the message of the Christian spiritual writers who have been the wisdom of our tradition in days gone by. They've said we need to stay there. We need to discover within that wood, within the dark wood, the markers and signs of the sacred. Because they are places where we not only meet our true selves, but we meet God. St. Augustine said, "The path to knowing yourself and the path to knowing God are one and the same path." And the task of the dark wood is to discover or to uncover the sacred in that place, to find the unexpected love, that fifth mansion in the wooded place, the simple one, out there in the woods. In short, we confess that there are gifts in the dark wood, and that's what we're getting to at Lent. And one of those gifts, believe it or not, is uncertainty. Think about that. To many people, uncertainty appears more like a curse, really, than a gift. They think of uncertainty as being something that is faithless. Think about how much energy is put into fundamentalist groups in trying to crush uncertainty. They create these very stiff, sort of dogmatic ways of understanding the faith and push them on other people so that there can be a certain way of understanding and looking at the world, and there won't be any gray places or gray areas. But isn't it interesting? And Eric Elms writes this interesting statement. Have you ever noticed how the more certainty a religion claims to deliver, the more frenzied and hysterical are its adherents? It's true. And yet, as far as Christianity and Judaism are concerned, every one of the heroes of our faiths are recorded, as recorded in the sacred texts that we still read today. These people had high levels of uncertainty. In today's text, even, Paul says, when I was a child, I spoke like a child, I thought like a child, I reasoned like a child, but when I became an adult, I put an end to childish ways, ways that were sort of grounded on the belief that everything is clear and makes sense, and a rational person can understand it and be certain about those things. Paul says, as we mature, this becomes true to us. We see in a mirror dimly. As we mature, we understand, we see in a mirror dimly. And that Greek word is interesting, anigmati, dimly. From the, we get our English word enigma from that. It is, we see through a, we see the world as it were as an enigma. It is unclear. Paul is implying here that as we mature, we come to understand that life is a mystery to be lived, not a problem to be solved. In a life that understands the unconditional nature of God, the unconditional nature of love that we live in, is a life that accepts uncertainty as holding its gift for us. Now, what are the gifts of uncertainty, though? Think of something in your life that you've been uncertain or worried about in the past, some situation for which a resolution has already appeared. Think about that. And my question is, at that time when you dealt with that uncertainty, were you worried? What often happens for us is that our uncertainty comes with worry, doesn't it? Because we think that we want to know the future. Our amazing discursive minds get busy filling in the blanks of uncertainty with all sorts of scenarios, and many times they're worst case scenarios. And this is probably a protective mechanism we've evolved over the years as you think about it. Negativity bias, psychologists call it. But a persistent problem is that when we see times of uncertainty as atypical experiences that are supposed to be avoided, then we find ourselves, when we face uncertainty, contracting, squishing ourselves down. The uncertainty coupled with worry has a kind of a self-protective response, and we contract, and the world, the big real world of many possibilities, gets shrunken down into my world, which is a small, desperate world of my own imagination. It's a contraction of spirit, a contraction of vision. And it's also very emotionally taxing. If you remember that period in your own life, it's like work. Think about what people say. You're working yourself up. It requires a great deal of energy to be in that place, to sustain that contraction and worry. So ironically, at a time when we actually need more spirit and more vision, our physiognomy sets us up to have less of these things. And so we can contract and we can start to spiral down in times of uncertainty. And so at times like these, it's good to go back to the primary Christian confession, I think. And that is that it is perfectly right and normal for us to see through a glass darkly, for life to be uncertain. It is perfectly right and normal for us to experience unknowing and to experience enigma in front of us. But at times like these, we certainly need to resist that urge to contract and instead to ask, where is the gift in this? Where is the possibility here? Where is the love here? Where is the new connection that is emerging here? What new meaning am I discovering about myself and about reality here? Who am I becoming here in this place of uncertainty? Asking those questions is not going to automatically solve our problems, but it does bring meaning to the dark wood. It doesn't take us out of it. But it will frame the problems rightly, and it helps us to remember that God is here, and that love and possibility and meaning are always already in those dark places. And when we automatically and uncritically think about uncertainty as an abnormality to be avoided, we almost inevitably bring worry and contraction to that experience, even though we don't have to. As spiritually maturing beings, we can remind ourselves, hey, this uncertainty, it's a normal part of this thing called life, and I'm not going to worry about X or Y or Z until worry presents itself as an unavoidable option to me. Which reminds me of a question Jesus posed in the Sermon on the Mount. Can any of you, by worrying, add a single hour to the span of your life? What good does it do? And we can choose to do what feels like taking a risk at a time when we tend to want to self-contract. That is, we can say, I'm not going to contract, I'm going to try to expand. And I'm not going to move inward just now, I'm going to move outward. And I'm not going to cut myself off from the one, but I'm going to take time to take some deep breaths and to come back to myself, back to reality, capital R, with all of its enigma and uncertainty, back to the womb of compassion, which is the it I'm actually in. And I'm going to find the simple one, the solid ground, right here in this uncertain and shaky place. And when we choose that, very often what arises of itself is this wonderful sense, it's going to be all right. David Stendhal Rast, again, that's listed in your bulletin, writes this: you have to let yourself down into those waters, and this can be hard, particularly if you're thinking you might drown. You have to let go of all the effort and let yourself down, however awkwardly, into the waters. Today, I'm going to ask you to do something a little strange. We have these baskets, and Adrienne is going to find some people to help pass out some of these little slips of paper. And each of you, I'm going to ask to take a slip of paper. You have a pen or pencil close to you, I hope. And on those slips of paper, I'm going to invite you to write down something that you're uncertain of and perhaps feeling a bit worried about. And I'm going to ask you to come up as the choir is singing. When you've finished writing that down on your slip of paper, bring it to one of the stations up front. There's a bowl right over here, and there's going to be a bowl right here, and there's going to be a bowl over there. And just drop it in that water until it dissolves. This is not a sign that we're fleeing from the dark woods, but rather a sign that we believe our uncertainty is always already met by God's presence and possibility in the wood. So I'm going to ask the choir to come forward as we share in this way. Just take a few minutes. Think to yourself about what you'd like to